Okay, it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio Dr. Susan Reinhart. And she has a lot of letters after her name, and she occupies a lot of different positions, but I'm going to try to say them. She is Senior Vice President and Director, our Public Policy Institute and Chief Strategist, Center to Champion Nursing in America. And there are other things you do too. Welcome.
Thank you.
So this is your first visit to Alaska?
Well, I was here 20 years ago.
Oh, well, okay. And what do you notice? I have to ask, you were here 20 years ago. What were you doing here then?
I was here with the Medicaid directors in the country who had a meeting here in Anchorage, and we traveled a little bit. The Medicaid directors are people who run some of the state programs.
That's right.
And we were getting together at that time to see what we could do to improve health care.
And now you're back.
I am. We're still working on it.
Well, you have help. We have a governor who apparently believes that Medicare and Medicaid are both things that should be developed and improved here.
Yes. That was a tremendous decision that he made. We know that each governor has to make that decision.
That's a big one.
It's a big one, and I'm personally very proud of your governor, and I'm from New Jersey, and my governor did it as well right away, so I'm very happy.
Oh, how about that? Yes, I've been in New Jersey.
Good.
Yes. Okay. Well, let's go on. Why are you here this time, though? Tell us what has brought you back to Alaska.
Well, AARP has invited me to be a speaker tomorrow at a meeting of public health officials. It's a national meeting that they have, a state meeting that they have every year, and I'm really delighted that I was invited.
And if you're here, then you're going to probably speak. And tell us a little bit about what you're going to speak about. What's that going to be?
I'd be thrilled to do that. Okay. It's called The Culture of Health and Advancing a Culture of Health. It's really become a national movement, but needs to be done at the local level. So it's ideal to talk in a state like Alaska that is so local,
right,
and really important that we do that. And it has to do with cutting across the different sectors, I'll say, you know, not just government, but government and business and schools, and across the different kinds of people. I'm a nurse by background, for example, so healthcare professionals, but also business people, police, all different kinds of people that can get together at a local level and try to pool their ideas on how they can improve the health of the people they live with.
Okay. How long have you been in the state this trip? Have you
just yesterday.
Just yesterday.
Yes.
So you've begun to come around and meet a variety of people.
A little bit. Got to be here in this lovely town.
Right.
But also this morning I met some of the people that are going to be at the conference. The conference started this morning.
Okay.
So I got to hear some of the people on a panel and, of course, over breakfast meet some from around Alaska. So that was very good.
And you've had some good guidance with Terry Snyder.
Yes, I have. Terry Snyder is our president of AARP. So she's been bringing me around and introducing me to people.
And I'm going to guess you will probably have a chance to hear about and or visit with the people associated with our own very strange Valley Health Foundation. Have you heard about that?
No, but I'm sure Terry's going to be telling me about that.
She's going to fill you in. Because,
she will.
Because that's a very unique operation which has had as a purpose much of what you've just described here has been working toward that end of bringing together a variety of different players in the Valley.
Yeah. That is great.
And they have a reasonable source of money that is growing that they can apply. And I'd be interested later on, after you have had a chance to think about that, perhaps Terry has filled you in, pick up what you think about that initiative.
I would be happy to do that.
Well, let's go back. Let's go back here. Your work when you're not here in Alaska, what would you say your primary work is? What do you do each day?
So every day I lead what is known as the think tank for AARP. It's technically called the Public Policy Institute.
Okay.
And we have about 70 people working there, thinking about health and long-term care. They talk about Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security and retirement security, how to be healthy in general. And we also have this Center to Champion Nursing in America that is part of this think tank.
We had a few moments to talk about my experience, having had people in my family that have been involved, still involved in nursing. And I thought back about 25 years. That's it. And that just before you arrived here in Alaska the first time.
That's right.
How would you say nursing has changed in that period of time, the past 25 years?
That's a very good question. There's more and more nurses every year, even though we never have enough nurses. In fact, I like to say we have an insatiable demand for nurses.
Okay.
Because nurses can do a lot of different things. You know, most people think of nurses being in a hospital.
Sure.
And it's about half now across the country are still work in hospitals, but they're more and more in the community. There are school nurses and, of course, public health nurses, but there are nurses that work for insurance companies and risk mitigation and quality improvement. They have a lot of ability to use their education and skills. So I would say there are more nurses, so it's changed over time. There are more.
Okay.
And they're more likely not to be in hospitals. So that's a big change.
Yes, it is.
And they are more, they're generally getting more education. At least that's one area that we're trying to see if we can help nurses to get as much education as possible, because the problems that we deal with in this country are becoming more and more complicated.
Would you say there's something of still, given the numbers of nurses, a nursing shortage in the country?
Yeah, the shortage is one of these cyclical events.
Right.
So when we have a recession, for example, you'll see a shortage start to diminish because more nurses decide not to retire, or those that might be working part-time go full-time because they have to help their families. But there's still, even in a recession, there's a need for nurses, particularly in areas like nursing home care or places where nurses may not think first to go, especially as a new graduate. But there is a growing need for nurses, particularly those that understand chronic disease, chronic care conditions, which, by the way, happens across the lifespan. It's not just for older people.
Sure.
So that takes a lot more knowledge and skill.
So when we talk education these days, we have to look at two aspects of technology, I think. One, the increased use of technology within the service areas, whether it's a hospital, wherever you are. And then the second interesting aspect, which involves what I've observed generally in education, is distance-delivered learning, online types of things. Would you care to comment about either or both of those?
In relation to nursing?
Yes, please.
Yes. So increasingly more nurses are having experiences in distance learning themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So they may not go to a classroom every day, for example, but do more online education and be able to take classes around the clock pretty much in self-paced, which really helps if you're also holding down a job at the same time or caring for family members. So that's been very helpful. Nevertheless, nurses do need to get into situations, clinical situations, where they're actually working with people, so that you're never going to have distance learning for all of nursing education, but you can have a lot of it done.
And back in the day, again, I drift back a long time ago, I can remember that there was a time when there were, as you know, programs out of primarily Catholic hospitals that had three-year programs, and at that time, the typical experience for a graduate from that program was to have spent quite a bit of time in a hospital setting.
That's right.
And as the transition occurred to more and more of a academically-based, university, college-based training program, it was an interesting, what appeared to be, lessening of actual clinical time in a hospital as time went on. And so graduates would be comparing that. So someone who came out of a more academic program would arrive on the scene, but they would not have the kind of patient contact that had occurred before. And so it was always a discussion of how did that, you know, how does that work?
Yeah. So that's a good point about your earlier questions, what has happened over 25 years. So there are very few nursing schools anymore, diploma schools. Almost all of nursing education has moved into county colleges, as well as universities. So it's more and more outside of hospital on-the-job training kind of a focus. I'll give you an example. My sister went to a diploma school.
Okay.
I loved it. I wanted to be just like her. I wanted to have the nursing cape.
Right.
I wanted
the whole thing. Yeah.
I remember the whole thing. And she told me not to do that. She said, you need to go to college because the world is changing.
Sure.
And I really am very grateful to her. By the way, she's a fabulous nurse. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But what's happened over time is that a lot of the time that nurses were spending in that kind of a situation was more doing things again and again and kind of running, they call it running the floor. They weren't necessarily taking the patients all
right.
the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do need to make sure that nursing students have enough contact with patients. Although increasingly, not just for nursing students, but for medical students and others that work with patients, we are moving more into simulation labs.
Right.
So technology has moved into laboratories.
Right.
Where you have very sophisticated, I used to call them mannequins. I don't know what they call them now. But they're technologically capable of having their pupil change, for example.
Sure.
Their eyes
right.
change
all of that.
When you put a flashlight on it. That
right.
didn't happen years ago. So they will have scenarios so you can expect what happens when the person's blood pressure drops suddenly or another terrible thing starts to happen. So you can practice.
Sure.
In a very scientifically grounded way before you actually work with a patient, that's really happening. So I think the combination is a good one.
So that's all helpful as setting the background. But let's look out the window here and mm-hmm. see that it happens to be a very sunny, nice day in downtown Palmer. And you're going to be going to a gathering, mm-hmm. and you're going to be talking about some ways in which a culture of health could be advanced. Alaskans in Alaska tend to look at themselves as being different, and I probably could define it, yes, that's true. How is this going to work here in a state which more recently, for example, has finally reached a goal that's been set by a number of people, a single payer health insurance system, however, in a way that perhaps was not intended. Premera is the last insurance company standing in Alaska for a certain group of people that have been under the Affordable Care Act.
Mm-hmm.
And there has been suggestions that Alaska suffers from, one, a lack of competition, and that the situation here is a very strange one in terms of cost for health care
mm-hmm.
And the rest of it. But we have also those situations where we have a concentrated population in the South Central area and a few other cities, but also a scattered population in villages, somewhat different than, somewhat like a few other places around. So how is Alaska going to do this?
So the first part is that we need to focus a lot more on health and not just health care.
Okay.
So we do tend to think about health care delivery, and some people call it sickness care or illness care, which is, of course, very critical if you're sick. You've got to make sure that if you need an operation, say, that you have a way to have that paid for or have sufficient resources for that, and you have the personnel that can do that. But a large part of what we need to do is think, they call it more upstream.
Mm-hmm.
Did you really have to have that operation
sure.
to begin with? And
right.
of course, many times you do.
Yep.
But if we can keep ourselves as healthy as possible for as long as possible, we will see a reduction in the need for as much illness care. And this country has not thought about that for a very, 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 very long time. In fact, maybe never. Other countries have thought a little bit more about that, but the whole world has to think more about this. The growing obesity problems mm-hmm. leading to more diabetes among children, we're talking about,
right.
who then for their whole lifetime will suffer from other kinds of consequences like blindness and other problems that can occur with hypertension or diabetes. We have to figure out a way to prevent that. And so that gets you into making sure you can get outside and exercise, you have the right food, that you aren't just sitting behind a video
right.
You know, playing games, things that are associated with childhood obesity, for example. Can we address that?
Okay. There's another aspect I noticed of the focus you have in your own work, and that is family caregiving,
yes.
Particularly toward the end of life. had that opportunity. My dad, last 5 years of his life, lived with us, and so my wife and I had the experience of working with him over that period of time. And he was 92 when he passed away, and I now I value that because I realize that there are many people that in one way or another are working with a parent, whether it's in a care facility or at home, one way or the other. And I also valued very much the support we received in a variety of different ways to make that happen. So what do you see in this whole arena of family caregiving?
Mm-hmm. We spent a lot of time. This is one of my personal passions. I started as a visiting nurse. And if you're a visiting nurse, you are visiting a person in their home where there is almost always a family person, if not many, who are involved in that, in helping the individual who has whatever problem is that they have at the time. And so I learned very early that I needed to talk to both the patient and the family caregiver if we were to make any progress.
Okay.
So it comes from many years of thinking about how to help them deal with the particular situation, but whatever they're going to have to do in the long run. Because very often it's not just one-time problem, but let's take diabetes again. You know, what are you going to have to eat? What about these injections? You know, how do you check the blood sugar? All of those things for the long term, how is that going to happen? So since I've been at ARP in particular, I've been trying to bring research to that to try to show how many caregivers are there in Alaska, for example. And if we were able to pay them for their services, how much money would that be? Mainly just to bring visibility. It's not as if we really, in Alaska or any other state, would pay everybody every dollar that they are literally worth in free care. But to put a spotlight on the fact that they really deserve more attention. They need services, as you said. They need training in what they're doing so that they know how to give the injection if they're giving an injection.
Right.
What about this diet that they're supposed to have? And we have found through other research I've done, it's called home alone, that most family caregivers feel that they're home alone, that they don't have that kind of support. And in fact, they don't get it. So we have been trying to move legislation based on this research known as the CARE Act.
Okay.
And it has to do with if you are in a hospital that the person can say whether or not they have a family caregiver, and if so, that person's name can be put in the medical record so that you can bring them into the care along the way. And if they're going to do any of these more technical skills or frankly anything that they need to know, that they get that guidance while they're in the hospital. And they know when you're going to be discharged, so it's not like a sudden kind of event, which it so often is. And I believe Alaska is going to move in that direction. At least I hope so. We've had many states, about 21 states now, that have done this.
So that was in the direction of an answer for the question I had, which was, what's the relative effectiveness of a federal approach versus the states, or how are those two levels of government working to actually make this happen?
Okay. So I think the federal government can bring some guidance. They can tell hospitals what they must do if they're going to get Medicare payment, what they must do. But they can never be very specific, and they can't be very localized. They can't appreciate, well, how would Alaska hospitals do this, or Alaska nurses, and what are the needs of family caregivers here in this state? And that's true in every state. So I am a big fan of state action and local action. Again, I think because of a visiting nurse. And I used to be a health commissioner, a deputy commissioner in the state of New Jersey, too. So I do appreciate understanding that policy and practices have to be very sensitive to the needs of the people that live there. So, I think every state will design what policy they need. The federal government can often provide resources, maybe some promising practices of what's going around the country, which I hope to get involved with that as well. And they can reinforce it. So they can set the parameters, like hospitals, you really should be paying attention to family caregivers. And then Alaska can say, and this is how you should do it.
Right. So I'm looking over your bio, and you've mentioned ARP, and you're working with ARP. This is maybe an easy question, but why did you choose ARP? Of all the things, given your background, the variety of things you have done, et cetera, how about ARP?
why did I leave what I was doing?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Well, there was a headhunter who called me and said, there's this very interesting position. But I had been working with AARP or ARP for many years in the state of New Jersey. In fact, they had asked me to be on their executive council as a volunteer because I was interested in how consumers, how real people could be involved in setting policy and expressing what it is that they needed. And so I was interested when I got a call from this headhunter and I met with the folks. Took me a while to decide because I was very happy with what I was doing in New Jersey. But what I found very appealing since I knew about AARP is the power of having people, real people's voices being heard.
Okay.
And that they could speak, they could go to their own legislature and just say what it is they thought and what they thought needed to be done there. And I wanted to be part of that. So here I was conducting research. I had my nursing practice. I had done policy in New Jersey. But to go to an organization that could take some of what I think might be a good idea and make it happen was very appealing. And I was only going to stay for 2 or 3 years, and that was almost 9 years ago.
Oh, okay.
So that's I do like it.
That's helpful. Yeah. Well, back in the day, I remember coming across a number of interesting, what I thought interesting spinoffs from nursing, and one was Kinline.
Kinline?
Kinline. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
That's kind of a, okay, I just threw that out because we had a practitioner here. Kinline was a more of a health advocacy. In other words, to see a practitioner before you were sick. That's what I and that's what I would bring up.
Nice.
You know, this whole concept of healthcare and what you've talked to already is really don't wait until you're full fledged diabetic to say, well, let's see, what can I do? But also, you know, the kind of training, the kind of education, the kind of encouragement for people at a younger age, pre-coming into a serious illness, what can you do to better your health? Mm-hmm. So what kind of initiatives, just some up there, are we talking about in the policy discussions perhaps that you're having now?
In terms of nursing or
yes,
more generally?
Nursing, specifically. Nursing as a not go there when you're sick, and because you've already described a situation where nurses are not in hospitals,
right.
And for example, even school nurses.
Right.
I worked with many school nurses. Their work, yes, there'll be somebody who has a need for treatment because they've just fallen and whatever, but there's also a huge amount of the work that they do that is ahead of the game, ahead of being sick, et cetera.
I was also a school nurse.
Oh, there you go.
As part of my visiting nurse job, I also did school nursing. I love that job. It's probably a favorite job, actually. It was wonderful. But nurses are increasingly involved in occupational health, they call it, or working with employers.
Mm-hmm.
Many companies are seeing this. You know, many pay for health care.
Right.
Even if they don't, they want healthy and productive employees. So they're saying, well, what can I do to help people stay on the job and be really present, like healthy, not distracted, healthy
exactly.
on the job. And many are bringing clinics or at least a nurse to, in fact, I think AARP might think about this someday too, but having someone on site that is there so they can answer questions right away, maybe do a little triaging even.
Sure.
Is this something that you really need to have paid attention to right now? Or, you know, do you really just need to rest and take an aspirin, as they say, to take two aspirin and call me in the morning, the old-fashioned way. But we are seeing more of that health in the workplace. Schools are becoming even more interested in having more health care delivered because that's a captive population.
Sure.
To have those services, I really hope we see more and more school nurses, not fewer school nurses around the country. But in other words, where we work, we live, we play, the idea of bringing that kind of support outside of institutions to where people are.
Right, exactly.
That's the growing trend. And nurses, I think, are very well prepared. Not only nurses, by any means, but I think that they can and will do that. And there is in the state here, there is an action coalition, the Alaska Action Coalition.
Okay.
And it's part of a campaign that we are running around the country, the Campaign for Action, the Future of Nurses. It's based on work from the Institute of Medicine, saying that nurses need to lead. There's 3 million in the country.
Nurses
are the largest healthcare professional there is. So we need to get out there and make changes in the country. So every state that I've been working with for the last several years, 5 years now, has an action coalition, and that includes Alaska. And they're part of this meeting that I'll be at tomorrow. In fact, I think I'm having dinner with some of them tonight.
Very good. Okay. Well, I've enjoyed this. It, in part, it reminds me of things out of my own past. And it obviously looks toward the future here in Alaska. And you certainly are an articulate representative of the profession.
Thank you. That's very kind of you.
I can say that. Yes.
I've enjoyed talking with you, too.
Any last comments before we finish up?
Well, I mean, I'm hoping that I get to see more of Alaska and maybe come back and spend more time here. So thank you very much for inviting me.
Okay. You're welcome.